This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. The City of Bloomington Budget Task Force is recommending some substantial cuts, but Alderman Scott Black has his doubts they'll materialize.
There's no coalition here that I think would really genuinely look at the major cuts that would have to come from our structural deficit.
Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner is in the studio to take your questions about the work of the task force, a sales tax increase, and other city matters. The state budget standoff has moved into stages not seen in recent political history. Republicans and Democrats continue to blame each other, and they're doing it through proxies. You'll hear two reports. And during Animal House, Laura Kennedy fills you in on a serious urinary condition called feline idiopathic cystitis. All of that and a GLT News update on the way. It's Tuesday, September 29th, 2015. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT. With additional support from the Jack Baytall Real Estate Group, more information at jackknowshomes.com. This is GLT.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. The work of the City of Bloomington Task Force for the Budget is complete. The panel designed to help aldermen come up with a workable plan to eliminate a $7 million structural deficit released its final report last week, the same day the City Council approved by a wide margin, a 1% increase in the sales tax rate. With us in the studio to discuss these and other issues, as he is almost every Tuesday following a regular council meeting, is Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. Thanks for stopping by, Mayor.
Thank you so much, Willis. Great to be here.
Do you have a question about City of Bloomington government? What do you think of the Budget Task Force report? Call 309-438-8910 and speak with Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. Before we get to the budgeting matters, let's look at what happened at last night's meeting. The council overwhelmingly approved spending $129,000 on water infrastructure improvements at Lake Bloomington. Water Department Director Bob Yale mentioned to our reporter Michael Hill after the meeting that there are other areas in heavily wooded parts of Lake Bloomington that will eventually need some attention. What's the timeline and the cost for this work?
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were going to play from Bob Yale.
No.
Well, that's some of what we're still working on. The council has to make a determination of that. It's what we can afford. We may very well need to examine some of the rent, in a sense, the ground rent that people pay who own homes on Lake Bloomington, and so we can recoup some of the costs to taxpayers in our city.
The council unanimously approved reinstating the Cedar Ridge development southeast of what you might call or on the edge of the natural city limits of town. This project goes back 9 years and goes against your philosophy of so-called inward growth. What happens next?
Well, again, this was one of the many agreements that we have had in the past that we would not make as we move forward. We do want to make sure that we revitalize our downtown and our older neighborhoods, not to encourage a sprawl or to encourage or to perhaps subsidize new development. So as we move forward, we're not going to do that. We're certainly going to pursue a very different, and now have been, a different approach. This is an older agreement. The Snyder Company was in compliance, and more than technical compliance, beyond the 30% affordable housing. So we would have had an awkward position for many ways, and legal, perhaps, issues, as well as we don't want to send the signal to other possible developers that the City of Bloomington breaks its word.
Mayor Terry Renner is in the studio to take your questions. You can call 309-438-8910. There are signs violence is on the upswing in Bloomington. Police Chief Brendan Hefner warned West Bloomington residents over the weekend about an increasing number of home invasions there, numerous burglaries with forced entries, as well as an uptick in shots fired incidents that he attributes to gang-related activity. And then last night, a woman was released after hospital treatment following an apparent attempted robbery near Illinois Wesleyan University. Does all of this collectively merit some sort of city action above and beyond what the police can do?
Well, I think in the short run, the police are on top of this. We do believe that, and certainly have every reason to believe, that these are isolated incidents. By isolated, they are not part of a broader trend. There are perhaps two individuals in particular that seem to be responsible for a couple of the recent events in Illinois Wesleyan. And so we will do as much as possible to apprehend them. I would like us, though, as we move forward, to put more emphasis upon so-called proactive community policing strategies. And I think those have been very effective in Bloomington in the past and in many other communities. And again, let's be clear, we always want to be vigilant, but at the same time, keep into perspective that Bloomington does have a comparatively low crime rate, and one of the, it's not always the lowest, sometimes it's the lowest, sometimes there's an uptick slightly, but we're at the bottom of all cities, metro cities in Illinois.
All right, now on to the budget, Mayor. You've been quoted as saying the budget task force recommendations exceed your expectations because it's balanced and thorough with service cuts and user fee increases and tax increases. You're a professor. What grade, what final grade does this panel receive for its work?
Well, I would give them an A on this. And essentially, we, just to be clear, we've got a whole list of possible user fees and charges, and then cuts and service reductions. We're not going to pursue, can't pursue all of them. Some of them actually are mutually exclusive, but they put lots of ideas out on the table. They did put a penny sales tax on the table that would go have gone to city services. Actually, what the council approved was really 0.75 cents that go to the city of Bloomington and 0.25 cents that we will be sending to the county for mental health. So we still are a couple hundred thousand, $2 million, shy of a balanced budget this year, over $3 million next year. So we are now shifting to the either reorganization, cost saving side, reductions, cuts, and possible user fees. If you use our services or if you profit from some city service, then we're going to likely ask you to pay more. For example, liquor license fees have not been raised since 1983, and we do not charge for video poker machines. And the reason I target those two, as a liquor commissioner, I can tell you we spend lots of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars implementing liquor in enforcement. And the people who make a profit from that, rather than the taxpayers, I believe should bear the increased costs of those services.
Well, let's focus in a little bit on these cuts that do, that have to be made, really, somewhere. Are there enough direct cuts to satisfy the budget hawks on the council or out there in the community?
Well, I wish that we had more obvious targets, but we have to keep in mind we had approximately 750 full-time equivalent employees 5 years ago, 6 years ago. We now have 650, so we have a workforce that's already much leaner than it was by about 100 full-time equivalents.
But would you say that's to the bone yet?
It's pretty close to the bone. And in many cases, really, we need to have a few more firefighters to reduce our response times. I think we probably need some more code enforcement officers. Otherwise, we're going to have more dilapidated properties where people get away with things. So we have to prioritize. There may be some areas where we still can cut, but there is no pot of gold out there. And the same thing, there's certain things we can't do. If we didn't make capital improvements on the Coliseum, we would be in breach of contract, and there'd be fewer gigs that could go to the Coliseum, so it could cost us more money. So there are lots of things that are easy to hype on that a few, very noisy people try to hype on. But the big picture is we're getting our act together. We have had about 20 to 30 years, frankly, of problems and messes that we're now trying to clean up, and we are steering this city into a different direction, one that's smart growth, downtown revitalization. We are making sure that we have a service culture. There's no good old boy, good old gal network. You're not automatically getting an appointment to a department head just because you or your brother-in-law had worked for the city for 30 years. We're getting our act together. We're getting being responsive. So we're certainly on the move and pursuing economic growth in a smart way.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. Did the budget task force go far enough in spelling out cuts? What would you recommend? Call Sound Ideas right now at 309-438-8910. Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner is here to take your questions. There are some recommendations to seek reimbursement. For instance, the cost of providing aircraft rescue and firefighting at the Central Illinois Regional Airport. But the recommendation isn't to eliminate this service. If the Central Illinois Regional Airport says, no, we're not going to reimburse you, then does the city stop paying for it? How does that work?
Well, that's some of what we're going to talk to with our intergovernmental partners. Again, everything that's put on the table by the budget task force needs to be more thoroughly vetted by myself, the city manager, and the council, and look at the advantages advantages, disadvantages of that. So there are some things that are out there that I think upon further investigation and analysis, we will not likely pursue. Again, we don't need all of them. There are some things that are, again, fairly obvious targets, liquor license fees, video poker, other things. We're doing an analysis of all of the fees that we charge people and businesses. Are they appropriate for the cost? Are we recouping our costs? So I think those are the areas that are more fruitful in the long term. We do have a vested interest in having a strong airport and making sure that their fees that they charge to carriers and passengers are very low. That's what keeps us attractive. So I would be very, very cautious about pursuing that either with the airport or with school districts.
I want to stay on the cuts for just a moment. I know you're talking about the increases in some of the fees and the video poker, but the task force recommends reviewing outsourcing golf course operations.
Absolutely.
Or reviewing selling a golf course.
And that's what we're going to be doing. In fact, we're already in that process. Now, let's keep in mind, those are recommendations now that have been put on the table. The council will go back and decide how many of these they want to pursue and what timetable, but there's definitely an interest in seeing we've got three golf courses. Do we need to be in the golf course business at all? Or is there a special role for Highland just because of its massive green space and its historic value? And what's the process of making all this happen? Remember, our fiscal year runs from May 1st to April 30th. So we have made an incredible amount of progress in just a few months. We've gone farther than we had in the first 2 years as I was mayor, and by April 30th, and we're already here and we're not even at September 30th. So we've made some really great progress, and I think we're going to have great discussions, especially with the new dynamic on the council.
Where do you think budget cuts should be made, or what do you think about the whole budget-making process in the city of Bloomington? You can call and talk with Mayor Terry Renner right now at 309-438-8910. Alderman Scott Black had some strong words about the will of the council to make real or deep cuts after Ward 2 Alderman and Budget Task Force co-chair David Sage essentially polled aldermen about whether they were willing to make some cuts. Here's part of an exchange between you and Alderman Scott Black at that meeting a little over a week ago.
We are just all over the place, left and right. And there's no coalition here that I think would really genuinely look at the major cuts that would have to come from our structural deficit. And we're looking at gutting the BCPA.
Well, and I think David is asking, and I think maybe there's a different question. I think Alderman Sage is asking if we're all ready to begin to make some cuts.
Yeah, and I'm saying
maybe
that we're not.
Like the ones that are on the budget task force.
I am saying that we are not. I don't think that this group here has ever, in my experience, demonstrated the willingness.
But we have a new council now, Scott.
I still don't think that's the case. I mean, think about how many times that we get a few emails on a topic that you know, parks or zoo or whatever, and we stop what we're doing, we delay it. That's kind of our nature. Look at solid waste. We all agree that there's something that needs to be done. We haven't made the tough decisions, you know, and to delay this, there are so many pressing things that we have going on right now. And I can sit here and say, yeah, I'm going to support cuts. Yeah, I support cuts. But then when I get it in front of me, I still have my out to be like, well, this is just too much for my liking.
Alderman Scott Black from the September 21st meeting. Is he right? Where is the evidence of past cuts?
Well, actually, there are two different things that I think are being asked. I believe Alderman Sage was asking us individually if people would commit to making cuts. Scott was talking about the city council's record. And the city council's record is pretty much as Scott has suggested in the past. I think we've got a new energy and a new dynamic, and we have made some progress really over the past 2.5 years. It's not just because when I became mayor, but also we had some new council members, and then I actually managed to appoint two people who got elected in their own right, and then with Amelia Burgess's election, we really have a new group of people and a new energy on this council. So I think the council will do the right thing. But in the past, yes, I mean, the council's record over the last 10 years or so has been one of hesitancy and fiddling and pushing things off, kicking the can down, debating and postponing. He's absolutely right on that. But we're going to get it done as we move forward. We've already gotten much done.
Last week during Sound Ideas, Budget Task Force member and retired McLean County Administrator John Zunick talked with Mike McCurdy. He's someone you worked with. I'm talking about Zunick here as a former county board member. He says a budget task force was never needed in his 20 years. And here's what he had to say about the county's budget making process.
Our fiscal year is a calendar fiscal year. So each May, the Finance Committee of the County Board and then the full County Board would adopt a budget policy resolution. And in that resolution, the board would be very specific in terms of setting out specific principles, policies for the staff to follow in preparing the budget. And that covered a wide range of issues, from the property tax levy to full-time employees to new federal or state grants coming in to our compensation schedule to capital improvements. Once that resolution was adopted, that was the template for preparing the budget. So my charge as the county administrator was to take that template and, in meeting with the elected officials and the department heads, to craft a budget which met the policy guidelines set forth in that board resolution.
So does the city need a process much like the counties, which seems to work pretty well?
Yeah, well, actually, we did have committees that were established by Mayor Stockton, and there was a finance committee that actually was on. The problem of those committees is there was such a lack of trust, they weren't working. So we disbanded them several months into my administration. As we move forward, though, I think with the council currently, I think it's possible for us to establish a committee system. I have suggested that. We will see how some informal work groups work before we discuss that more thoroughly. We're going to talk about it in our retreat in November and then in the new calendar year. I was proposing that we have public safety, public works, and public finance. If we had a finance committee of three, that we could have that exact same process. The other thing is that as mayor, the mayor of Bloomington actually structurally has lots of authority over the budget. Not only is there an overall veto, which is extremely unusual, only about 28% of American cities give their mayor a veto, but a line item veto that only about 2% of American cities have. So I conceivably could use that authority to get tighter control over the budget preparation process. But I didn't, in my first 2 years, that was less an issue going in than getting the city council to come forward and realize that we really do have to pay our bills and we've got to make some very tough choices. That was why I had to actually use the veto threat twice in 2014 in order to get a realistic budget. So at this point, we, I think, are exploring several different possible structures for us to really move forward.
It's 438-8910 to talk to Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner. I'm Willis Kern. This is Sound Ideas. We have Nick on the line. Nick has a question about golf courses. Nick, what's your question?
Well, basically, if we're talking about reducing costs for the city to provide a service to the residents by subcontracting out, you might as well say, the operation of golf courses, then why can't this same idea be extended with other services that the city provides its residents?
Okay, Nick, did you have any suggestion of any particular area for the city to think about?
Well, every service that the city provides to its residents could be done by outside labor forces, could they not?
All right, well, let's see what the mayor has to say about that. What about contracting with outside labor?
There have definitely been discussions of that. In the budget task force has thrown out several ideas for that. And throughout the country, when I used to be at the International City Management Association back in the late 80s, contracting out was really, really, you know, hot to try to save money. When I talk, you know, to go to the U.S. Conference of Mayors, mayors throughout the country are talking about some of those issues. It depends on the service. For example, right now, you send your water bill out of state. We don't actually even process water bills unless you come to the city hall and pay your water bill. So there's some things that are contracted out. The thing that you have to be careful of is, let's say we contracted out solid waste. That was one of the proposals, or sometimes people have thrown out. You lose a lot of control over that. Right now, if somebody, let's say we forget to pick up trash on some cul-de-sac, they can call their alderman, they call me, and we get them out there usually within an hour or two. And we go out there and when we pick up the trash, there's greater control over the quality of that than if we had a company, let's say out of Chicago or Springfield or Peoria, and we'd say, hey, you know, we're going to remember in 2 years when your contract is up if you don't go out and do that. You definitely lose control. And you may not save what you think you save. At least of the mayors and managers I've spoken with over the years, there are at least as many that deeply regret contracting out, for example, trash collection, as those that are happy with the cost savings.
And we know that Bloomington is well known for having the Cadillac service when it comes to that sort of thing, and citizens apparently willing to pay for that. Nick, thanks for your call. We're going to take another call from Bloomington. This is Adam. Adam's on the line. He has a question or comment about priorities on the cuts. Adam, what's your question?
Yeah, my question is, we're talking about what needs to be cut, but in previous months and weeks, we've all discussed what the city wants. We've had Flamingos. We've had talks of the IBC being torn down and changed into a hotel. Things like this, why are these conversations still being had when there's a deficit at hand? We've got serious things we need to look at. These roads are terrible.
All right. I don't think anyone's talking about, Adam, I don't think anyone's talking about tearing down the Coliseum. I think there are buildings near there that possibly
I think
could.
I think it's probably what Adam's referring to. And Adam, actually, it's at the time where you have budget issues. So you don't have to raise taxes and you don't have to make massive cuts. The best way is to grow your local economy. That's absolutely what most any mayor that I've ever spoken to throughout the country or city managers realize. And that's what we have to do. So the thriving downtowns are absolutely critical. In fact, this a little over a week ago, I was at the National or the Illinois Municipal League, and there was a gentleman there who was head of a company out of Texas, and he said, I invest millions and my clients invest millions of dollars. The first thing we do is we look at downtowns. If the downtown is not thriving or if it's stagnant, we know that that's an indication of two things. One, that's where the economy's going, and two, the local leadership, elected leaders don't get economic development. If the downtown is thriving, and then they know that that's part of the direction of the community and that the local leadership gets economic development. And they said, even if this guy doesn't want to invest in downtown, they don't even invest on the periphery or other areas if the downtown isn't thriving. That is what pretty much real estate agents or developers, economists throughout the United States realize. Downtowns are where the action is at this point.
So what do you think, Adam?
In our case, it's not necessarily like that. I mean, as you see, out east is expanding quite a bit. A lot of people on the east side don't necessarily come downtown.
And they don't. And that's one of the other reasons why making your downtown a destination is critical. And actually, in terms of the kinds of investments we were talking about, we were not talking about spending any money out of the general fund. We were going to try to make sure, as a Reagan-era reform, what are called TIFs, and that is let the merits of the project itself pay for whatever incentive packages might be there. For example, if we had a conference center, a hotel, whatever, restaurant, we're getting no revenues out of that now. So if we rebated revenues that were generated because of the multi-million-dollar private investment, that would not be something that affects the general fund. And those are the kinds of tools of economic growth that are essential as we grow our economy in the 21st century.
All right, Adam, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Mayor, we're running out of time. I want to ask you about the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. One of the recommendations is to run the BCP as an enterprise fund, meaning it would have to pay for itself. Is there a public performing arts center in the U.S. that's run as an enterprise zone that you know, or enterprise fund?
I'm sure there are. I don't necessarily know that what the circumstances of those might be. Usually that's not the case. And so what you do is make the decision that if you want to go down that path and continue to subsidize a BCPA, you make the decision that was made by Mayor Markowitz and the City Council at that time, that this is an economic benefit to the community, it's an economic benefit to downtown, and it is an amenity that we want to spend some money on. If you decide you do not want to do that, that's a policy decision, and obviously that would have pretty dramatic effects on the BCPA. And let's, in our $186 million a year budget, roughly the net subsidy to the BCPA is $1 million. So it is a little over a half of a percent of what we spend. So it's clearly not up there with anything like public safety or other, you know, the core functions of the city government.
And then there's a proposed operational audit on the BCPA. Who knows what's going to come out of that? Maybe they'll find that you're not spending enough money on talent. So all of a sudden, this audit could lead to more costs, I suppose. That's one.
Well, regardless of what the audit said, the council has to make that policy decision. It may be that there are some economies of scale, for example, with having uniform booking between the Coliseum and the BCPA. CPA, the contract on Central Illinois Arena Management, CIAM, that manages the Coliseum, is coming up, and that is absolutely one of the things that we're going to be looking at moving forward.
Mary Renner, thanks again for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Willis.
Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner joins us on Sound Ideas following each City of Bloomington regular council meeting. This is Sound Ideas.
Support for GLT comes from Constitution Place, an office, retail, and storage project located in the heart of Bloomington at the corner of Empire and Linden. Space is available now. Leasing information at 829-1700 or constitutionplace.net. This is GLT.
And this is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. By now, you probably have a sense that things in Illinois state politics have gotten downright nasty, even if it's not completely clear what all the fighting's about. But there's more to the fight than the public gets to see. There's squabbling and gamesmanship and backbiting that rarely makes the news. Today, you'll go behind the scenes to see some of the petty tactics being used by both parties. We have two reports. First, IPR's Tony Arnold covers something Republican Governor Bruce Rauner's been doing, something that's really been getting under the Democrats' skin.
I've heard the whole dispute in Springfield described as a war. And if you think of it in that way, then think of Republican Governor Bruce Rauner and Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan as the generals. But what you may not have heard of is how the shin-kicky hand-to-hand combat is playing out on the front lines, which is why I want to tell you about a guy named Richard Goldberg. Chances are you've not heard that name, but the name Richard Goldberg is well known in the halls of the Capitol. Goldberg works for Governor Rauner, and he drives Democrats crazy. To give you a sense of him, Goldberg's young. He's 32. He used to work for Congressman, now Senator, Mark Kirk. And Goldberg's very good on his feet. He's quick-witted and fast-talking, and he just seems to like a good political fistfight. The way Governor Rauner's been deploying him is as a proxy with lawmakers. As in, Democrats have business to do with Rauner, and Rauner sends Rich Goldberg as his representative. Democrats don't like it. They see it as a slap in the face. They call hearings, and Rauner sends someone they basically see as a whippersnapper. Case in point, May of this year. State Senator Kwame Raoul calls a hearing on workers' compensation. It's something he's done a lot of work on in the past. He knows the issue well, and Rich Goldberg shows up. Here's how that went.
To be able to grow our economy, to be able to create jobs, to be able to have the revenue base for our budget so that we are not just competitive but also compassionate. Mr. Chairman,
I am the chairman. I am the chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
I am the chairman. This is not the governor's office.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hayne, you recognize.
Mr. Chairman.
Democrats like Raoul feel like Goldberg breaks all kinds of rules of decorum, interrupting committee chairs, talking out of turn, and that's on top of the whole young whippersnapper effect. I talked to Raoul about all this after that shouting match I just played for you.
Some people want to give campaign speeches or maybe impress the governor. That's fine to be done outside of the committee room, to be done wherever they want to do it, in the bathroom or wherever they want to do it. But it's not fine to be done when we're supposed to be debating the specific provisions.
This scene, Goldberg as Rauner's proxy and Democrats feeling insulted, it played out a few times this year, and it only got worse. Here's how this other one went. Democrats are questioning a head of a state agency, someone appointed by Rauner. And that guy, the guy they want to talk to, he defers to Goldberg, as in he tries to give Goldberg the floor. Democrats were not okay with that.
The other elements of this bill, which I'd like to defer to Mr. Goldberg to address the question.
Well, Senator, if I could just address your question specifically, because you know that Governor Rauner proposed.
Mr. Goldberg, when a senator is speaking, when a senator is speaking to you, I would strongly counsel you to close your mouth and open your ears, and then you'll have a chance to respond.
That last voice, the one telling Goldberg to close his mouth, is State Senator Don Harmon. And I met with him recently to reflect on that incident.
It was part of a much longer hearing, and I'm frankly listening to it now not particularly pleased with my condescending tone. But at the time, it was like talking to my preteen children who were talking over each other and yelling at each other.
It's worth mentioning that Senator Harmon is not known for talking smack. He's an attorney from West Suburban Oak Park who's been a state senator for 12 years. But when I actually sat down with Harmon to do this interview, it was obvious that Harmon's had some things about Goldberg on his mind for a while.
Rich's job is to be the governor's unmentionable anatomy.
Let me just pause for a second here and say that I did ask him to clarify. When Harmon says unmentionable anatomy, he means something that rhymes with grass bowl.
Rich's job is to be the governor's unmentionable anatomy, and he embraces that role with a flair and enthusiasm that can only have been born of years of experience in fraternity houses and undergraduate bars.
Governor Rauner's administration did not make Richard Goldberg available to me for this story, but a spokesman for Rauner did send a written statement. Quote, "It's no surprise that these local legislators aren't willing to clean up Springfield when they relish the opportunity to personally attack a Navy reservist who served our country fighting terrorism in Afghanistan." In other words, hey, Democrats, you just called the war veteran a grass bowl. Now, let me just remind you that while this is going on, there's been virtually no meeting among all the leaders in Springfield in months, and no real sign of progress. Which brings me to one more example of the battles on the front line, because Goldberg's been doing something that's made him even more notorious. You know how Democrats were so mad when Goldberg would try to speak at those hearings earlier? Maybe the only thing that can make Democrats matter is Goldberg not showing up at all.
Is there anyone from the governor's office here to testify? Is there anyone here from the governor's office to testify? Is there anyone here from the governor's office to testify?
That tape is real. It's Democratic Representative John Bradley putting on a big display because Goldberg did not show up at a hearing. Goldberg was not there because instead of showing up and antagonizing Democrats in person, he's been writing them antagonistic letters, and he's been doing it for months.
Dear State Representative Bradley, thank you for your letter of July.
I asked University of Illinois political science professor Chris Mooney to read some of them so you could get an idea of the tone.
As you may know, 35 minus 28 equals 7. Finding errors in basic arithmetic is not a great surprise.
These letters are full of lines like those, where Goldberg insults Democrats' intelligence. In other parts, he straight up calls their hearings worthless.
Holding sham hearings to rehash questions already answered in another committee is not a step toward compromise.
You get the idea. Some of these letters are a fireworks display of condescension and petty insults. And the icing on the cake, here's how he signs off.
With warmest personal regards, I remain sincerely yours, Richard A. Goldberg, Deputy Chief of Staff for Legislative Affairs.
I asked Mooney how he'd rate the snark level on a scale of 1 to 10.
Shall we say 11?
Mooney says what stands out, though, is the motivation for this level of snark. Like, some of the gimmicks going on are designed to be traps and could be turned into campaign hit pieces by the other party. But these particular hearings and letters aren't likely to end up being used in campaign ads against one candidate or another.
It's really gratuitous in this case. I don't quite understand it. It seems rather personal.
I talked with a few other lawmakers about Goldberg. Democrats say they're embarrassed on behalf of the Rauner administration because of Goldberg. And his presence in that job is a signal from Rauner that makes them feel hopeless that any kind of deal is on the horizon. But Republicans defend Goldberg. They say Goldberg is a person of substance, and if Democrats would just listen to him, they would see that. In other words, Republicans say if there's a problem here, if something's toxic about what's happening with Rich Goldberg, it's the Democrats' fault. I'm Tony Arnold.
So that's one way Republicans in Springfield have been antagonizing Democrats amid this whole standoff. Now, for a report from the other side, something Democrats have been doing to get under Republican skin. And with that report is IPR's Amanda Vinicky.
On page 5 of the calendar, under the order of House Bill second reading, there appears House Bill 684. Mr. Bradley, Mr. Clerk, please read the bill.
Republican Governor Bruce Rauner has said he has five big things he wants for the state of Illinois. On August 25th, the Illinois House, led by Democrats, brought one up for a vote.
This would provide tax relief to the people of the state of Illinois.
They were about to vote on Rauner's plan to freeze property taxes. This is something that would transform a main source of revenue for every town, city, and school district in the entire state. On top of that, it was Democrats sponsoring one of Rauner's ideas in the middle of all this fighting. You would think it'd be a huge deal. But no, the discussion, if you could call it that, lasted all of 2 minutes.
Those in favor of the gentleman's amendment will vote yes, opposed no. The voting is open. Have all voted who wish. Have all voted who wish. Have all voted who wish. Mr. Clerk, Please take the record on this question. There is one voting yes, 64 voting no, 13 voting present, and the amendment fails.
The package goes down in flames, and the media, myself included, ignore it. The reason why, we've seen this before, many times before.
Mr. Bradley.
I stand to call the governor's property tax proposal once again.
This is Representative John Bradley calling the exact same proposal July 21st. He'd also put the same measure up for a vote on June 9th, June 23rd, July 1st, July 9th, July 15th, August 5th, August 12th, and August 25th.
This is identical to a bill that we voted on seven or eight times.
Every time, same result.
And the amendment fails.
A brutal, definitive death. It's become so routine by now that Democrats joke about it.
Representative Nekritz.
Is this lucky 13?
I think it's 12.
Oh, darn, next week.
Altogether, property tax relief was brought up for a vote 14 times in just 4 months. 14 times. That never happens. Bills usually get one chance, maybe two if they just miss the goal line. Not a dozen. It's a not-so-subtle way of Democrats taking one of Rauner's ideas and, in public, burning it to the ground, over and over, on an almost weekly basis. As you can imagine, Republicans are ticked. Just listen to the withering disgust in Representative Ron Sandeck's voice.
Boy, if people want to know, if we wonder why citizens are cynical, if we want to know why they're skeptical and why they don't think there's a lot of hope in Illinois, especially in its governance and in its government, here's Exhibit A, this whole process.
Sandeck is the designated mouthpiece for House Republicans. Just about every time Democrats call a vote on the property tax freeze, Sandeck stands up and rails.
There's no reason to believe that this is any more legitimate than the 8, 9, maybe 10 previous instances of this charade, this joke, this embarrassment, this waste of time, this sham, because this is the personification, the definition, the embodiment of a waste of time.
As I said, part of it is that Republicans are watching one of their big ticket items die over and over. But it gets even more complicated than that. GOP legislators are helping do it. You heard that right. Republicans are voting against property tax relief. To understand what's happening here, you need to know one thing. Rauner's property tax freeze proposal is attached to a plan that would undercut unions. He wants to freeze property taxes if and only if Illinois also limits collective bargaining rights. Democrats wouldn't ever go for that. So the way Democrats are playing this, it's a little complicated. They're breaking Rauner's single proposal into two parts. So each part gets voted on separately. Democrats get to look good voting to freeze your property taxes. Then they make labor happy by killing the governor's anti-union proposal. That's a deal Governor Rauner won't go for. And so Republicans vote against all of it. That's how you get a bunch of Republicans voting against property tax relief. Republican Mark Batnick says Democrats are playing games. At this point, he refuses to vote at all.
Nope, I don't vote. It's 14 times, 15 times, 100 times. At what point are we going to start being adults and start actually addressing the issue instead of, you know, worrying about what's going to be on a mailer?
When Batnick says mailer, he's alluding to the political implications of all this. Democrats can print campaign flyers that say Republicans stood in the way of property tax relief like a gazillion times. An attack ad like that has already gone out in Batnick's neighborhood.
This is not about policy. This is about campaigning. This is using the legislative structure for political purposes. My belief is good policy is good politics. That's not what's happening here. This is using the General Assembly to further your political gain.
Democrats don't openly cop to this strategy. It's no political setup. They say they're genuinely trying to compromise. I mean, they have tried to help Rauner out with property taxes 14 different times, right? The thing is, if Democrats were just wanting to use this against Republicans for campaign reasons, that's already been taken care of. At a press conference, I asked Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan, why keep calling the same measure over and over when it always meets the same fate? What's the point now? Isn't it just a little gratuitous and a waste of time?
Remember that old expression, America is the land of opportunity? Remember that?
Yeah, I know it.
Okay. And so we're just abiding by that principle and providing opportunity to these rounder Republicans in the House to fulfill their promise to freeze real estate taxes. Now, in life, sometimes people are a little slow to take advantage of opportunities, so we don't want to foreclose the opportunity.
I asked one of Madigan's floor leaders if Democrats plan to keep bringing this property tax proposal up for the same vote, if they're going to keep putting Republicans through this. He said they'd keep doing it until, quote, something breaks loose. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
And I'm Willis Kern. You're tuned to Sound Ideas on GLT. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Before there was John Boehner or Kevin McCarthy, there was Jack Kemp, an ex-football player turned Republican revolutionary. While many Republicans give Ronald Reagan the credit for what happened in the 80s, two longtime watchers of Washington say it was Jack Kemp who carried the ball. They've written a book on his legacy. That's next time on Here and Now.
Listen to Here and Now today at noon on GLT News and Ideas.
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from the Jack Baytall Real Estate Group at Keller Williams, committed to helping you find the right match. Buying or selling your home can be easy. More information at jackknowshomes.com. This is GLT.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. Cats are fastidious creatures, from grooming to elimination. They like to keep things clean. So if your cat starts peeing outside the litter box, it's a bad sign. WGLT's Laura Kennedy has more on one of the most common urine-related issues that can impact cats during this edition of Animal House.
First things first, if your cat is peeing on the floor, on your slippers, on that pile of laundry, then your cat needs to go to the vet immediately. It could be diabetes, it could be a bacteria infection, or it could be something that impacts over half of all cats. It's feline idiopathic cystitis, or FIC for short. Dr. Matt Fraker of the Prairie Oak Veterinary Center says FIC causes hemorrhaging into the bladder, and it's very painful for your cat, so you want to get immediate treatment. But because it's idiopathic, it's tricky to diagnose. Really, it's a diagnosis of exclusion.
Those are words owners hate to hear, which means we have to make sure it's none of this other stuff.
So you have to test for a whole host of things.
Kind of. I mean, really, one of the things that's going to be the best is a really good urine sample taken right off the cat. You can get urine out of a litter box. There's ways to do that, but that's a lot of debris. There's going to be bacteria in it. There's going to be crystals in it, and it's really hard to tell how significant that stuff is. So we really like to get, we call cystocentesis, and we hold the cat in the clinic for a while. They don't want to usually urinate there. Their bladders will start storing up urine, and then we can just tap that urine right off the bladder. It's right coming right out of the bladder. So if we see a ton of white blood cells, red blood cells, bacteria, we can culture it. We can look at the concentration of it. You know, if it's really clean and sort of dilute, then we're going to go do some blood work. If it's full of debris, then we can kind of judge from the debris in a culture. If nothing grows out of this urine, then we probably have FIC. And what's happening with these guys, they've figured out that just like with humans do have a neuroendocrine response to stress. It's gastric ulcers. You get this disease in your stomach if you're stressed out, where you actually can cause such a change in your own environment that you re-rode holes into your stomach lining because you're stressed out. Well, cats have the same analogous neuroendocrine situation, where when they're stressed behaviorally or socially in a household, it causes their bladder, and it's a complicated, you know, it's kind of a click, 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 and you end up with this bladder bleeding, this bladder hemorrhagic and bleeding and uncomfortable. So the component to managing these cats is multifold, and it involves sort of addressing how can we alleviate stress and a cat in this household.
Now, you would think, hey, that guy sleeps for 19 hours a day. Just how stressed can he be? So tracking down stress might be difficult.
It's extremely difficult in cats. And again, dogs, which are much more, they have much more of a social component, interactive component. So dogs are a little bit more honest with their emotions. You could have...
never thought of it like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Like those introverted cats, I tell you, you can't figure out what's going on.
Well, but when we ask owners, it's funny because we almost always get that answer. Are you kidding me? This cat lives in a huge house, or these cats all get along. We never see them upset at each other. But there, especially in multiple cat households, there's a feeding order there. There's going to be a dominant cat. There's going to be submissive cats. For example, here's one situation that we see frequently. And you'll hear that if you have three cats, you should have four litter boxes.
Yeah.
I personally think that is not the solution, because no matter how many litter boxes you put in that house, the dominant cat will lay claim to all of them, and the submissive cat will start becoming afraid to use that, because that's the dominant cat's box. So you'll see these cats, and where do we put our litter boxes? You never have them like out on a table by the flowers in your coffee table books. You stick them in corners, you stick them in places where if a cat needs to get in and out of there and not get beat up by another cat, and again, you may never see any evidence of the social stress going on between multiple cat household. But you may have a cat that says, I can't use that box because that's Big Bob's box. So they start going in different places. And again, it's not always multiple cat households, but it's taking that cat, sometimes giving it its own space with a brand new, go to a store, brand new litter box that's never been used, and put them someplace where the other cats can't get to them. The other thing we do, and this is in any cat household, because this will happen to individual cats sometimes, is even without other cats in the household, look where your litter boxes are. Sometimes people don't realize they're like by an old, like a vent. And so this, every time they go into the litter box, that vent goes, boom, and air starts blowing out of it, or if it's by a washing machine and they get nervous about it. So you want to think about things that might make them anxious about using the box. And cornered boxes, that's, you always want to pretend cats are going to have to get the heck out of that box fast. So it's good to have...
So no lid on a box, so a cat can't feel trapped.
It's interesting. A lot of people say, don't close that cat in, and yet, I think especially in multiple cat households, you don't want to close the box up. If you have a cat that's by itself, yeah, you may want to, a lid might actually give it the privacy it wants. It's sort of test and error. The other thing is levels. Cats really do positively respond to levels in a house. Getting them someplace so they can get off the floor. You know, they are climbers by nature. And so many of our households, they can get up a little bit on furniture, but sometimes they're not allowed, or kitchen counters. No, bad kitty cat. But giving them places that elevate them where they're supposed to be elevated, where they can see outside of windows and that.
Good cat tree will do that.
Yeah, cat tree. They have stuff that's not tacky. You know, doesn't look like it belongs in a crazy cat person's house. I mean, you know, that people walk in and say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You also want to know if there's cats outside, if you have feral cats in your environment.
Because that can really upset
a cat. Mm-hmm. And that can set off all sorts of things. Territoriality, like in male cats, we'll see them start spraying versus urinating on the floor or urinating on the laundry. And that's an important distinction to make. If your cat's urinating out of the box and it's hitting vertical surfaces, that's often a little bit more of a dominant stress than these cats who are slinking off and peeing on other substrates they like. Now, we do have some other things we can do with these kitty cats besides just hoping that we can make the environment a better place. It is funny, though. I'm going to quote this article, which summarized all of these great studies on FIC. One thing that we have tried with cats, it's harmless, it may not work, is glycosaminoglycans, which is the same thing you use for joint supplements. There is a little bit of a mucus film on that bladder layer. It's like mucus, and we do think that GAGs may help improve that layer, which then helps improve the bladder health. And then when you look at the recommendations, you read, currently there is insufficient evidence to recommend oral or subcutaneous GAG therapy in cats. Right after that, it says, could be helpful, though, you might want to try it. anti-anxiety medicines. There's insufficient evidence to recommend short-term treatment with anti-anxiety medicines. And then right after that, they give you the doses on what you should use.
What are they saying?
This is an actual, I mean, these are in the, and
that's a textbook.
It is. It's a very recent article. Very recent. It's so difficult with cats to get really good results. So now we do, when we get these cats who are like this, and we think it's FIC, and if the owner is, if they will eat, the GAGs can be a powder you put on the food. We use anti-anxieties all the time. time. And the idea with anti-anxiety medicines, and if you can't do these orally, they do make formulations that you can rub on the ear, transdermal.
Oh, cool.
And then if your cat's still peeing all over the house, you can just rub it all over your arms and you'll relax and feel so much better. This syndrome, one important thing to note about this syndrome is in many cases, it lasts 1 to 7 days and resolves on its own. But we'll use anti-anxiety medicines and pain medicines on these cats when they're doing this. And that sometimes just, it's not to sedate them through. We're not trying to drug your cat into a coma so it stops peeing all over the place. It's really just to notch down the anxiety and just kind of make them more comfortable with their day-to-day existence. And then these pain medicines are often a little bit euphoric, so that kind of comes in and sweeps up that sort of confidence level or whatever you want to call it while providing really decent pain relief.
That's Dr. Matt Fraker of the Prairie Oak Veterinary Center. He says moist food is helpful when treating FIC. Hill's, Eukanuba, and all the big players have prescription diets geared toward getting a neutral pH and a healthy bladder environment. Looking to show a new furry friend how much love and caring you have? Consider adopting Tripper, the Animal House Pet of the Week. Tripper is a 3-year-old kitty who sports a gorgeous black and white coat. This queen among cats will worship you and only you. When she's not busy napping in the sun or on your bed or on your lap, this laid-back girl wants to be your one and only. And you can find her at the Humane Society of Central Illinois. I'm Laura Kennedy.
And if you have a question for one of the Animal House team of experts, just let us know. Drop us a line at WGLT.org. Our website is also where you can find the Sound Ideas archive and podcast, including this episode with help from Laura Kennedy. Also, thanks to Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner for stopping by. I'm Willis Kern. We want to know what you think of the interviews and the stories you hear during Sound Ideas. Get in touch at Facebook.com/WGLTFM or tweet your comments using the hashtag Sound Ideas. I'm at Wee Kern, and we're all at WGLT News. This is listener-powered WGLT Normal.